Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Now, there has been, and I love this episode, there's been an ongoing debate for many, many years as to the difference between Tennessee whiskey and bourbon. Many of my followers have known that I have been sucked into these arguments for quite some time. I've also mentioned on separate occasions that there are a couple of women in this industry that are absolutely changing the game. They are making massively fantastic decisions for their big corporation distilleries, and they're the right decisions. Two of those people are Jackie Zykan, of course, with Old Forester. Old Forester can do no wrong, but also Nicole Austin from Dickel. Nicole Austin is the general manager and distiller at Dickel in Tennessee, and had the brilliant idea to launch for the first time in many decades a Dickel bourbon, labeled bourbon, not labeled Tennessee whiskey. Now, I have sworn off brand interviews for the most part because they come off a bit sales pitchy, but this is a little different of an interview. I'm going to have a conversation with Nicole Austin about her decision, pitching it to the higher-ups, what the real difference is between Dickel bourbon and Dickel Tennessee whiskey. And of course, the overall conversation of, is Tennessee whiskey a bourbon? Could it qualify as bourbon? What do the regulations say? At the very least, I think that everyone who views this is going to enjoy this conversation. So let me give you a quick ad read here. Whiskey Neat is brought to you in part by Legiant Bourbon, a first of its kind super premium bourbon that melds Kentucky distilling tradition with Japanese blending excellence. Legiant is a perfectly balanced yet complex and layered whiskey with a bright, unexpectedly long finish. And you can order a bottle of Legiant Bourbon today from drizzly.com. And please, as always, drink smart. Of course, you know my other sponsors. You cannot go wrong with Balcones. They played the ad at the beginning of the show. And of course, are one of my all-time favorite Indian single malts, that is Amrut. Amrut, as you guys know, has been a long-running sponsor of this show. And this year, Food and Beverage Magazine's Proof Awards gave Amrut Single Malt a stunning 98 points, a near perfect score, and double gold. Amrut would like to thank the listeners of this show specifically for being a part of its success. Without further ado, please welcome Nicole Austin, General Manager and Distiller at Cascade Hollow Distilling. Cheers. Nicole, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I believe it was the last Whiskey Social, right before the pandemic, somewhere in February, and then the whole world just, you know.
Yeah, what is time?
Well, I'm excited to talk to you. I know over the years, and before we get in too deep, who have you talked to so far? Where can other people find some interviews about this new product coming out? Because I know we're going to dig deep. I know Martin Duffy mentioned that you were going to do his show. I don't know if that's aired yet.
Yeah, I just did that yesterday. Yeah. A Sip of Knowledge. So we did that yesterday. And I've spoken to, I think there's a piece in Up Rocks, there's a piece in Forbes. And I'm sure by the time this comes out, there will be others. I'm definitely making the rounds to talk about this one.
So for those who aren't aware, and let me just give a brief history. And feel free to interject with some tidbits as I'm going here. But so the two most famous iconic Tennessee whiskeys are, of course, Jack Daniel's and Dickel. Dickel has been around for quite some time, and for its existence, It said Tennessee whiskey on the label, not bourbon. And there's a new product coming out. I believe it's 8 years old.
Yes.
That's going to be labeled bourbon, which, by the way, just from a marketing wild card perspective of like genius ideas, I'm so excited about this. So talk to us about the product, and then we'll get into the controversies and the, well, not controversies, but the excitement around the subject.
I think it's fair to say controversies. Certainly, I definitely get sometimes some oohs and ahs and, you know, gasps to talk about Tennessee whiskey and bourbon. So not at all unfair. You're exactly right when you say George Nichols got a lot of history, just over 150 years, actually, to be exact. So the company was founded in 1870, which is definitely quite a heritage to be mindful of. And as you said, that, you know, the whiskeys have been sold as Tennessee whiskey for the bulk of that time, not in its entire history, right? So, and this is really kind of diving into the weeds, but George Dickel is a brand, right? So George himself was a Nashville general store owner, and he bought whiskeys from a number of different places, as was very common in that kind of mid late 1800s period, and sold them, you know, along with all sorts of other goods out of his general store, which was quite typical at that time. That's how most whiskey got sold. And the way that George Dickel, the Tennessee whiskey brand, found its home in Cascade Hollow was George had kind of the early insight that, you know, where your whiskey is from matters. And he made a direct investment in Cascade Distillery. So that's the distillery in Cascade Hollow, which is where the whiskey is still made today. We still use the same spring water that original distillery was built next to. But that distillery has produced other things. There's some other brands in the history of that distillery. There was one called Cascade Pure Whiskey around the turn of the century. So other things have come from that distillery that were not George Dickel Tennessee whiskey. So as much as I don't want to downplay the how monumentous what we're doing now is, it is kind of in keeping with the history of the distillery.
So I broke a rule. So sometime last year, we stopped doing brand interviews because, typically speaking, brands who are doing interviews, it's typically the same conversation from podcast to podcast. So I broke the rule here because I do think it's incredibly, it's always been a point of contention for me. And I don't know why it bothers me so much, but this idea, you know, marketing plays such a massive role in spirits. This idea, by creating the designation Tennessee whiskey, it is often and specifically saying this is not a bourbon. This is a Tennessee whiskey. There's a difference. It's been an ongoing debate for so long that in and of itself is quite genius because it keeps the conversation going. It keeps the brand on people's tongues. It keeps, you know, keeps everything a part of the, as I like to say, the zeitgeist. Whose idea was it to finally release a bird? Was it yours? I mean, I need to know. Yeah.
Yeah, it was my idea.
And yeah, so go ahead.
No, you're fair, right? I think I've already gone through all the stages of grief on the fact that the liquid is not the only thing that matters when it comes to selling whiskey. You know, like marketing, we're all vulnerable to it. You know, even if we think of ourselves as completely above brands, you know, like even in choosing the brandless clothing that we're wearing or whatever, like we're all subject to that kind of influence. And so, you know, it's been hard for me to kind of come to terms with that. But I think what you talked about there, like that regional identity, you know, and coming up with these designations, I know it's a little bit nerdy, you know, but obviously I love to get into the weeds on those kinds of regulatory issues, but they really do matter because they really do have very real world impacts on what's available to you on the shelf, you know, and what kind of whiskey even exists, right? Like if these distilleries can't keep their doors open, then you don't get to have that whiskey, you know? And so if you're a very educated whiskey consumer, I think, who thinks of yourself as like above the marketing of it all, you know, it matters for what you even have access to. We thought a lot about that. And kind of the way I came to actually understand a little bit about Tennessee whiskey was when I was in New York And we were thinking about creating Empire Rye, which is the like the regional designation that we created in New York for New York State rye whiskey. And we were like really asking ourselves those exact questions, like, what is the point of this exactly? You know, like why bother putting, you know, a border on something and saying we are different than all the rest of the rye whiskey in the United States, that this is a unique thing. And I think you only have to look at some like Scotland, for example. I mean, there's, it does matter, because if you can build up a concept, you know, then the work that everyone is doing together, like all of the work that those little individual New York distillers were doing, was building up to something that they can all also benefit from. You know, it's shared, it's a way of sharing the marketing work, you know, so that there, it really does kind of raise all boats. So it matters, you know, it matters, because that's how you get to a place where you have really small distilleries that can exist, you know, over a period of time, even though they don't necessarily have a massive marketing budget. So, you know, for me, Tennessee Whiskey was interesting at that time because they were the only ones that I had seen that had been really successful at it, you know, creating a regional designation of bourbon that, I think, as you said, in some ways they were almost too successful, because they built up such a strong identity on their own that people really lost the connection to this is bourbon, right? That it's not something different than, you know, it's a regional type of bourbon, which I think is the best way to understand it. But Tennessee whiskey, you know, it became so strong itself. I think a lot of people lost that thread.
Oh, absolutely. And for those who aren't aware, there has been an ongoing debate over whether or not Tennessee whiskey technically or federally, whatever, however you want to look at it, qualifies as bourbon. It's been an ongoing debate. And if you simply Google, is Jack Daniel's bourbon, the very first result that comes up is from their website. And it says, no, we're not a bourbon. We're something more. We go through charcoal filtration. And there's quite a bit of debate over whether or not, because it's sugar maple charcoal,
they're answering a different question than you're asking, right? Like, if you ask Jack Daniels, are you a bourbon? They say, no, we don't identify as a bourbon. But what you did not ask them, could your whiskey legally be called a bourbon? You asked them, did you choose to call it a bourbon, right? Which is a very different question. And I think realistically, there's no debate when it comes to the laws, you know, and the rules and the regulations.
Oh, right? I love it. It's like what's that old Neil deGrasse Tyson quote? The great thing about science is it doesn't care how you feel about it, right? Or
that's
something
exactly
along
right.
those lines.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, the Code of Federal Regulations does not care how you feel about it.
Sure. And there needs to be something said. There's a difference between a state law and requirements, which is what in 2000, I believe it's 2011. I always forget if it's 2011
or
2013.
It's very recent that the state law was passed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's either 11 or 13. And I'm willing to bet it's 13. But the law just basically outlines what something labeled as Tennessee whiskey can be sold for within the state of Tennessee. It only applies to the state of Tennessee. It does not apply.
Well, that's not entirely true, right? Because of course you have reciprocity, right? So in the same way that like your Tennessee driver's license is good in Georgia, you know, like Georgia has obligations to not allow violation of those rules.
Sure. The one reciprocity, well, at least when it comes to driver's license or for instance, gun license, right? Which is a big thing here in Texas. It can vary state to state. That's neither here nor here, but the main point is that
there's an expectation of enforceability beyond Tennessee's borders,
which is exactly how our trade agreements work when it comes to bourbon, right? Like we respect each other. Right.
Exactly.
So the argument is, so in 2013 or whenever it was, the law was passed in Tennessee that outlines what exactly what can be labeled as Tennessee whiskey needs to be. And one of those things is the Lincoln County process, which is sugar, maple, charcoal filtering.
Yes.
There's some thoughts as, oh, sugar, maple, charcoal, that must mean it adds flavor. But by nature, a filtration process is subtractive, not additive.
Although there's one producer who's actually doing their filtration that I know of under pressure. So they've created, I haven't tasted their spirit, but they claim it to be additive in addition to subtractive. which I think is kind of interesting. Yeah. But certainly at Dickel, I would say it's purely a separation process. And I relate it quite closely to distillation, which is also a separation process. And I think that's the best way to understand that sugar maple charcoal filtration, more as a continuation and in direct relationship to the distillation process, which separates based on volatility. Charcoal filtration separates based on chemical affinity to charcoal, right? But they're both separation processes. So both, as you would say, subtractive.
Right. And so the debate rages on, and then it seems like it, even after this episode, I'm sure it'll continue to rage on. But a couple months ago, some labels that cleared TTB COLA approval made its rounds that Dickel was releasing something that was an age-stated, labeled as bourbon, and in fact has the description of the process on the back that is very, very clearly, obviously referring to the Lincoln County process.
Correct. Yep.
So, to be clear, is what's being released any different than the typical Dickel Tennessee? Like, it's the same process. You guys are just deciding to go ahead and make it clear that this can be labeled as a bourbon.
I would say the liquid in the bottle is massively different from Dickel 12 or Dickel 8, but it's not because of the lack of a Lincoln County process. So you kind of asked me almost like two different questions, right?
Sure.
So was it made the same way? Yes, it went into the barrel the exact same way. So it has the same mash bill, it has the same yeast strains, it has the same distillation, charcoal mellowing process that our Dickel Classic recipe, Dickel 12, Dickel Bottled and Bond, Dickel Barrel Select, all of those SKUs, it went into barrel the same way that they did. Is it the same? No, it's not the same at all. And I think you only have to nose the Dickel Bourbon against the Dickel 12 to see how massively different they are, in the same way that Dickel Bottled and Bond is not the same as Dickel 12. And that's all down to blending and how blending and maturation are handled. So did it go into barrel the same way? Was it processed the same? Was it created the same? Was it the same kind of raw material out of which it was created? Yes, absolutely it was. Is it the same? No, it's not the same.
And that would be a massive simplification on my part, an oversimplification on my part.
No, it's a really, really, it's a very fair question, right? Because I think so much of what folks are taught is like, you know, kind of really simple process related steps like mash bill or yeast strain. And that's why the whiskey tastes that way, right? Like it has this mash bill and that's why it tastes that way, or has this yeast strain and that's why it tastes that way. So I think it's really, the only reason I kind of really emphasize that is because I think so many people really naturally reach a conclusion of like, because of this one element of how the way the whiskey was created, it therefore everything that has that means all tastes the same. And you know, whiskey is just unfortunately a lot more complicated than that, right? There's a lot of choices that you get to make along the way as a producer that impact kind of the final character and flavor and characteristics of the thing. And so this one really emphasizes blending. And
so one of the underlying examples that have gone on in this argument leading up to this point is there's been a question over whether or not, many people source liquid from Tennessee, and the question, and those who have sourced liquid from Tennessee, which have been future labeled as bourbon, for instance, Barrel, Smooth Ambler, these people have sourced liquid from Tennessee. They've labeled it as bourbon. You would think up to this point, it's painfully obvious that you can call it bourbon, even though it goes to the Lincoln County process.
You would kind of think that, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Until I believe it was, I'm going to give credit to Kenny Coleman and Ryan Cecil, but the question has been either it could have been called bourbon this whole time, or the liquid that is sourced doesn't go through the same process. So is it fair to ask you if all of the liquid from Dickel goes through the same exact process, even stuff that gets released to brokers?
We have made things at the distillery in the past that have not gone through the Lincoln County process. So I would never claim all, right? And in fact, I have a number of fun things planned that some of which don't involve the Lincoln County process, but were made at Cascade Distillery. So all liquid that comes out of this distillery has not been through the Lincoln County process. However, to answer your other question, again, I would never say all, but from what I know of sourcing and brokerage, I can certainly say that whiskey that has been through the Lincoln County process has been labeled as bourbon.
Many, many times by other brands and people who have sourced from you guys. So this is what I love about this. Sure.
Wink.
This is what I love about this conversation, because there's been clips that have gone around of Jeff Arnett very clearly saying, look, it's bourbon. In fact, I sat down with Chris, the current master distiller, and back when he was the assistant master distiller, and he said the same thing. He said, look, tell me what about this somehow violates federal law. So to be able to have this conversation with you and just to openly make it extremely clear that you absolutely can and do, and now you're releasing an official product saying so, which is so genius, because so I've talked about some women in the industry that I think are so in tune with what should and could rile up people like me, right? Like you and Jackie Zykan, I think, are two of the best in the business. What you two are doing, Jackie's pioneering with some of the old Forrester brands. I had Campbell Brown on the show, and we talked through all of the recent, I've openly made the joke that old Forrester can do no wrong between 1920, 1910, everything that she's doing now, releasing a barrel strength, single barrel program. Jackie is the driving force of all the great decisions that old Forrester has made. And Nicole Austin, you are right there. I mean, this is such a fun idea that it's so simple and genius that for an entire state to create a debate to begin with, and for it to go on for so long, many years, this debate's been in existence. And then for one of the two leading Tennessee brands to be like, all right, let's, you know, pardon my French, but let's fuck with them a little bit. Let's release a bourbon, that is labeled bourbon, but goes through the same process. So, it's one of the best ideas I think that you guys have come up with.
Thank you. I hope it goes as successfully as you think.
Oh, I think it will. I think it will. And if anything, it, part of the genius behind it is it helps pull the entire, I wouldn't say the entire conversation, but a big chunk of the conversation has largely been around Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
This not only is it great from a marketing perspective in terms of the discussion, but it pulls Dickel into more of the discussion around the subject, let's be honest, Dickel has been directly responsible for not only their own brands, but so many other brands. Like, you guys are a massive part of the bourbon world. And I say bourbon world.
I think you did right. That's part of the statement. I think that's part of the conversation that hopefully I started with Bottled and Bond, you know, and bourbon is just it's a continuation of that, right? Like, this is one of the great American heritage bourbon producers, you know, like the whiskey should speak for itself. And that's the conversation I was trying to start. And this is a continuation of that conversation.
So let's address a couple more of the ongoing debates around the subject, if we can knock it out real quick. Sure. Oftentimes, the subject comes up of whether or not filtering before it goes in the barrel or after it goes in the barrel makes a difference.
Yeah, sure. Massive difference.
In terms of regulatory speaking, which makes zero difference, right? Because the whether it goes in filtered before the barrel or after the barrel isn't addressed in regulatory code, and many brands filter both before and after.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair. And so there are, there's some kind of language around like traditional and accepted processes, right? Like, but anything subtractive in general would not be addressed, right? Because the way something becomes not bourbon is you've like added something to it, you know, flavoring, right? Sugar, like anything that's expressly not allowed, now you're outside of the category. But something subtractive like charcoal mellowing or, you know, the kind of chill filtration processes that are standard post-maturation, those are all subtractive. So you're right. No, they do not impact, you know, you could chill filter, you could non-charcoal chill filter before it went into the barrel. Yeah, certainly. I don't know anyone that does that, but you certainly could. Yeah, there's definitely nothing stopping you doing it pre and post.
So what do you, have you guys ever released something that was filtered post-barrel?
So the Dickel Rye is charcoal filtered post-maturation.
That's more of just a flavor decision.
Yeah, well, the Dickel Rye is MGP rye, right? So kind of the way that it, I think, makes sense to be in the Dickel portfolio is it uses that charcoal filtration process. But obviously, we didn't produce it, so we didn't have it pre-barrel. So we do the charcoal filtering for the Dickel Rye post-barrel. It's a much lighter touch post-barrel, right? You have like 2 to 3 day residence time, kind of when it's really an integrated part of the whiskey production process when we're talking about our Tennessee whiskey distillates. Whereas for the Dickel Rye, it's a much lighter touch. You know, like the whiskey is obviously good on its own. People have tried MGP rye, right? It's just a pretty kind of light touch. But the Dickel Rye is charcoal filtered after maturation.
So what can we talk about? So I know one of the best things for us to get out into the bourbon world, especially the Facebook bourbon world, is to simply comb through the COLA approval website. What future plans do we have? What are some ideas you want to do that maybe hasn't been solidified yet? Or, you know, where's your mind taking the Dickel brand over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about, you know, both the Dickel brand and then also other brands, right? So kind of Diageo went out of the way to give me a title that was not just about George Dickel, right? I'm the general manager and distiller for Cascade Hollow. So I've got other brands that are not George Dickel. It's still pretty small mostly, right? But Cascade Moon is one that I'm really kind of excited about. That's sort of my fun pushing the envelope, riling people up, as you described, you know, going even farther to have sort of an interesting conversation about what whiskey can be. So of course I released edition one, which was the Goza inspired whiskey, which is a blend of it was whiskey that was aged in refill casks. So it's not Tennessee whiskey or bourbon because it was aged in refill casks. And it's blended with a slightly younger, it was an 11-year-old Tennessee whiskey. So it's a 16-year-old whiskey and then 11-year-old Tennessee whiskey blend. That one I think was really interesting. I think that not a lot of people have probably tasted a 16-year-old whiskey made with a bourbon mash bill that was aged in America, you know, in refill casks. The anniversary edition, of course, that was a pretty big, bold, interesting, almost like Rancio wine inspired blend of 17-year-old. And that was pretty fun. I've got some more Cascade Moon releases coming that are, I think, going to continue to play with the conversation about what American whiskey can be. Something I'm really interested in is, like, I get asked all the time about barrel proof, you know, and am I going to release something at barrel proof? And like, could I make it higher proof? Could I possibly make it so high proof that it will literally dissolve your teeth while you drink it? Because I don't want anything less than that. So, you know, I'm going to continue that conversation with some of our releases. And I just sort of continue to mine like what we have in the warehouses to showcase them in some interesting ways. So that's going to continue. I do still have some plans for Dickel to kind of continue with, you know, we have some really nice whiskeys in the warehouse that really fit kind of the heritage of the Dickel brand. So continuing to work on that. Some of them are quite old, which is maybe a big enough hint to drop. And then, you know, we're getting close to 4 years since I joined. I started in March of 2018. So I think you can reasonably expect soon also to see some things that actually, you know, I was there when they were distilled, which is going to be really exciting for me because most of what I've done so far, obviously, you know, I wasn't present when they were distilled and all I've done is sort of blend and brand them. So it's going to be really fun for me to actually kind of get to start releasing things that I kind of touched holistically.
So I want to address the high proof and the age.
Yeah.
And then I have another question specifically about Tennessee whiskey that I think could be fun for you specifically to pioneer.
Sure.
One of my favorite things, I tend to lean heavy on in preference of the higher aged Dickel, not because it's a high age statement, don't get me wrong, but I love, to me, I get a ton of tobacco notes, and I'm not a big cigar smoker.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah. Same. Like I feel like Dickel, high aged Dickel, like one of my favorite bottles I bought at one point was the 17-year-old 375 that you guys released. Mm-hmm. I do love high aged Dickel. I feel like it's just a really unique profile. What's the oldest barrel you have in the warehouse?
Right now?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be completely accurate, but a safe
bet.
Let
me do some math.
All right. And while you're talking, I'm going to ask this other question for you to be thinking about. So I could be wrong, but I don't think I
am. Almost 18 years old.
Oh, almost 18. So the oldest thing. So we could be seeing something. Is it more than one barrel, right? Something we could actually release? Yeah. All right, cool. I say this often. I could be wrong, and I'm wrong often. Just ask my wife. But the Tennessee whiskey law does mm-hmm. not address additives. If you read that document, it addresses New Oak. It addresses all the regulations. It doesn't specifically address. So there's an old saying that all Tennessee whiskeys are bourbon, but not all bourbon are Tennessee whiskeys. And I don't necessarily think that that's true. Yeah. And I would love for you to, if you don't know off the top of your head, go back and look. But
no, that's interesting. That's interesting because I had never really thought about that.
Most people haven't.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Right. Because you're dead right. There's some rules. There's some whiskey related rules, right? So certainly the rules that are specific to all of whiskeys, right, would still apply, where if you're going above that sort of 2.5% by volume of like natural coloring, flavoring, or blending materials, you have to say, you have to say what you've done. But there are whiskeys, there are certainly American whiskeys that exist that use that, and it's because it's allowed inside the whiskey category. So I wouldn't want to, I haven't gotten like an official interpretation from the TTB on this, but
sure.
I follow where you're going. And that does seem possible to me. Yeah. That perhaps you could call something a Tennessee whiskey while still allowing some of those like natural flavoring or blending materials. It hasn't been pointed out to me, but it's possible.
Yeah. Nice little neat idea. So for those who aren't aware, just to catch you up, the TTB releases a great document that can be used by the consumer called the Beverage Alcohol Manual. The mm-hmm. BAM, I believe it's chapter 7, that addresses HCFBMS, harmless coloring, flavoring, blending materials.
Yeah.
And it does define what that is, wines included. So a lot of times you'll see some barrel finishing done in an old port barrel.
Well, so that's barrel finishing is treated differently. And that was addressed in the notice of proposed rulemaking that came out in 2020.
Last year. Yeah.
Yeah. So barrel finishing is treated differently than adding the like harmless coloring, flavoring, or blending materials.
But it still would disqualify something from being labeled as bourbon because you are technically adding flavoring.
So it used to, but now it does not.
So the new
rule. So you can do a barrel finished bourbon now.
And call it bourbon and just say bourbon on it.
Correct.
Oh, I have some reading to do. I have some reading to do. This is going to give Wade a stroke. you are familiar with Wade, right?
Yeah, I'm sure, I think it definitely like there's some changes. There's some pretty significant changes that were made in that response to the proposed rulemaking that came out in 2020.
Yeah, I need to go back and reread that. But going back,
it used
back
to be that if you barrel finished, you were no longer in the class and type bourbon, right?
Correct.
So you were a DSS that had to make an accurate a statement of composition, right? But now not necessarily.
Ooh, interesting. All right, so going back to, I know the NAFTA, the North America Free Trade Agreement, defines Tennessee whiskey as a straight bourbon whiskey, whereas the actual law in Tennessee does not necessarily say that. It doesn't mention bourbon at all, but it does mention the same merits of, New Oak, no more than 125.
Yeah, proof. It basically copies the statutory language. Yeah.
Correct. Except for additives. So I would love to see Because no one I know off the top of my head has released something labeled Tennessee whiskey that was.
Yeah, I don't know of anyone who's done that specifically. Of course, I don't know everything that everyone in Tennessee is doing, so I wouldn't say that no one has done it, but I don't know of anyone who has.
I'll send you my business address for you to send my consultant fee to for this idea, because I think if anyone could, we're experiencing something right now in Texas that I have often referred to as the era of yes. Texas whiskeys in particular, you can approach them with an idea, and more often than not, 99% of the time, they've said yes. So we've had a local spirits festival, the Texas Whiskey Festival, that approached four Texas distilleries and convinced them all to work together to blend and bottle a release. Yeah, it's super fun, right? And we took a Heaven Hill barrel that we had aged some honey in and took it over to Balcones, and they aged some single malt in it. This idea that if you have an idea, and of course these groups are going to immediately buy what you're selling, it's a lot harder to do with these massive corporations in Kentucky and Tennessee, because it's such a small drop in the bucket of a revenue stream, and logistically it's a bit of a nightmare. So to see a Tennessee whiskey brand, a large Tennessee whiskey brand, push the envelope, especially from someone, you know, like you, a young, I mean, there's this industry has largely been older white dudes. So to see a young, fresh perspective and to push the envelope in such a positive direction, it's extremely exciting. So I'm sorry. I'm so excited about
it. Is exciting. I'm excited that I get to do it. Like, I think, you know, that first Bottled and Bond and all the awards that it won, you know, and being Whiskey of the Year, like that really opened a lot of doors for me. I think that built a lot of trust where, you know, they've let me do things that I think you're exactly right. They might not otherwise, because it's just not, you know, it's not in the nature of what that company does traditionally. Like, you know, some of the whiskeys I've released, like Cascade Moon is a perfect example. You know, that first Cascade Moon was a really small number of cases. Like, you know, the revenue from that's going to show up in like the ninth decimal place, you know, of the, but that wasn't the point, you know, the point was to share something really interesting with whiskey lovers that I knew would appreciate it. And they've been, I think, really, really open to supporting me in doing those kinds of things. And it is a change, and it is exciting. I think it is exciting. It's what's giving me the freedom to do these things, you know, and building kind of some of the trust that some of it might sound pretty weird to them, but like, sure, let's try it. Maybe it's a good idea. It makes it more fun, more interesting, you know, and like whiskey is, you know, for the curious, right?
Yeah, I had a lunch with John Campbell once, who's the head distiller from Laphroaig. Laphroaig, obviously owned by Beam. We had this discussion where he, you know, there's all this reverence for a head distiller, as there should be, but within that corporate structure there, what he told me was, is like, look, I appreciate it. But my job is to just not mess anything up. Everything that's been put into place up to this point has been a working machine for a very, very long time, decades. He said, when I took over, all I have to do is to not change much. Like, don't screw up.
Yeah.
And it was so profound because it does basically speak to this. There's all this pressure outside of just you to make sure that what is working continues to work and not to break that system. And so
I know, and the audacity of me to come in and do a ton of different things.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But that speaks to this mindset that is changing. I mean, even Heaven Hill is now releasing, you know, I remember having a conversation Bernie Lubbers about doing barrel proof Elijah Craig barrel selections. And he's like, we're just not going to do it. But we're too big. It's difficult. It's going to deplete our barrel proof stocks for the actual release. And a couple years later, this year, in fact, 2 months ago, they announced they're going to start doing barrel proof single barrels.
These
ideas are slow changing. No,
it's funny because I'm considering the same, right? Because people keep asking me for it. And I think it's really, this is where marketing is relevant, right? Because like, I have a hard time imagining, you know, the way I'm actually doing my 15-year single barrel program right now is there's multiple proofs So I think I've currently 7 proofs in order that are, you know, existing labels, right? And you basically use like reverse Price is Right rules of like, you pick the proof that's the closest to the actual barrel proof, right? So, you know, if the barrel is dumped and its actual proof is 102.3 and, you know, we have one at 101.9, like it's, the idea is to dilute it as minimally as possible while still allowing me to have pre-printed labels. So I don't have to pay someone an astronomical amount to hand write something.
Sure.
And like, and also, by the by, if you do that, there's a lot of states, in Texas included, where you have to then do state filings with the exact proof on the label. Like, it's expensive, it's time consuming. So from my perspective, you can have barrel proof single barrels, or you can have reasonably priced, reasonably available single barrels, you know? And I assumed that people would rather have a single barrel that's reasonably priced that they can get in a reasonable amount of time, rather than having that like 0.6 degrees of ABV. But it's possible that I was wrong about that. So, you know, I would never say I'm not considering it. Like, I'm not too good to do barrel proof. It's just, I didn't think someone would want to pay the astronomical amount of money that it would take me to do the, have the labor to make that true, and wait the astronomically long amount of time that it would take for all of the relevant filings to do it compliantly. So, you know, I could be wrong. The other thing I could potentially do, and the other reason I didn't do this, is because I think there's a difference, obviously, between what you're allowed to do and what you should do. And you are allowed a certain amount of dilution and still calling something barrel proof, but I just felt like that was a bit disingenuous, especially with a single barrel. Like, you know, there's things I could do to put that word on the label. And I'm debating, maybe I will. You know, never say never. You live and you learn, right?
Yeah, I think, let me be the first to advocate for it publicly. I it's one of those things that needs to be, especially in bourbon, there's all these ideas that just need to be shaped. You need to find a way to make it work. And if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. But no, let me advocate officially. I think barrel proof offerings from you guys would be great, especially, you know, some decently high proof. Yeah, you know, Jack Daniels loves to age their single barrel proof options at the top two floors of their rick houses. And so you sometimes,
well, I don't have 6-story rick houses. Right. Well, I have single story rick houses. So I don't have those like big punchers.
Sure.
And I think that's part of why, you know, you talked about like really liking Dickel's older expressions, right? You know, that they're sort of, I think, surprisingly complex for the age in American whiskey. And I would put that down to our aging conditions, right? Like also the lower barrel entry proof, I think, plays a really important part. But those single story kind of more dunnage style warehouses that in a lot of ways mimic more of like a Scotch whiskey style of maturation, sure, than they do an American style of maturation. That's why our older liquids are not like that. You know, they're not 140 proof, massive, big punchers. Like they go down over time in proof. So, you know, when you see a 15-year-old single barrel for me that's at 84, it's because it came out of the barrel somewhere between 84 and 86. You know, like I didn't dilute it from 125 down to that number. So it's not watered down. That's how it came out. You know, that is pretty close to barrel strength. And I don't have that kind of thing in my warehouse because of the nature of how our warehouses are built. But, you know, I kind of embrace that, right? I think it's part of, you know, he was really onto something, right? The whole, like, we don't spell whiskey with the E, which I think is a little bit silly, but it's also a really important part of our tradition. There is a lot about how we make whiskey that in some ways borrows more, you know, from that European style. And maturation is certainly one of those things.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people tend to forget because of the what's passed down, you know, it's just like in wine or anything else. There's all these things that get passed down and taught to you at the early, yeah, stages that aren't actually accurate.
Yeah.
Dickel, Maker's Mark, Old Forester, they don't spell it with the E. In fact, none of our regulations spell it with the E.
They don't say. Yeah.
So for us, there is no fundamental difference with whiskey with the E or without the E in terms of
tradition.
It's just tradition, right?
Yeah.
This has been, at least from the things I've been ranting about all these years, just to like have someone like you on and to talk about it has been really fun.
But I mean, hey, of all the traditions that I'm bucking with bourbon, I did still spell whiskey without the E. So, yeah. You know, I haven't totally thrown over the apple cart, you know.
Sure, sure. Hold that up again. Let me get a look at that. Oh, man. That's got to be. I mean, when you pitched this to somebody, what were they like? Nah, that's nonsense.
No, actually, I think they were like, yeah, we should do that. I think, you know, it was really relevant. Like, I think people were a little hesitant, like, ooh, how's this going to go? But, I think it seemed obvious, right? Like, I had these whiskeys. And to be totally fair to the blenders, like, everyone before me, like, no one was ever asked this question. You know, like, they had a job to do, and their job was to make sure that Dickel 12 was the same this year that it was the year before, that it was the year before that, right? Which is actually a really hard job to do. So, you know, hats off for everyone who was doing it before I got here. But no one was ever tasked with, what do we have in our warehouses and what's the best possible thing to do with it, right? Which is a really different question. So, you know, when I came to my bosses with the, like, I have this whiskey that I think is really beautiful that actually reminds me a lot more of a traditional bourbon than, like, this big, bold, specific Tennessee whiskey style, like, certainly we could blend it away, you know, against these big, bold barrels, but what a shame. I have them. They're lovely. Let's put them in their own bottle. And, like, hey, you know, let's put an age statement on it because I have the whiskey and I can, you know, and be really transparent with people about what they're getting and sort of draw a line in the sand. I thought people would really value that. I hope that they do.
Well, of course. I mean, and this isn't an understatement, but this idea you've had that convinced a major corporation to say yes to is, without overblowing it, an iconic moment in American whiskey.
Well, it will be if it goes well.
Yeah. Right? Well, no, I would say that's the great thing about iconic moments in history. Whether it's good or bad, they're iconic, right?
So even if this is down in flames, but at least I'm still an icon.
Yeah. Even if it's a complete disaster, you know, it's something people aren't going to forget. I really do think it's a great idea. I think it's awesome. I really can't. My hat's off to you.
Thank you.
This idea was fun and so impactful and so genius on so many levels. I really can't oversell this. Listen, I thank you for your time.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate it. I appreciate, you know, the nerds are my people, you know, like I love regulations. I'm sure you've met Mark, you know, like, he and I are probably the only two nerdy people in history that have, like, tattoos of, like, you know, celebrating whiskey tax rules. Like, I love people that want to get in the weeds with me because
are you referring to Gillespie?
Mark Schilling.
Oh, I love Mark Schilling.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
yeah,
he and I have the same tattoo because we co-chaired the legislative committee of the American Craft Spirits Association for many years. And so when we finally passed the Craft Beverage Modernization and Tax Reform Act, you know, it had scarred us for life doing that work. So we made it official to let it scar us for life. So we both have a tattoo celebrating that work.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mark Schilling is someone that I cannot appreciate enough. He's
a great human.
He's been I had him on the show. We had a big debate over Jack Daniels being bourbon or not. And he summed up the debate.
But Mark, he's always here for me.
Yeah. No, well, he, I asked him the question, knowing his regulatory expertise, and he looked at me and he just said, I mean, does it really fucking matter?
Like, love Mark so much.
Mark Schilling is the absolute best.
Those are things that he is allowed to say that I definitely am not. I
am not allowed to say, yeah. Well, listen, thanks so much. This has been a fantastic episode. I cannot wait for it to air. And you're amazing.
Oh, it was such a pleasure. And I really appreciate people that care about this stuff. Because, like, as much as I know that most people don't and I love them, like, these kinds of decisions, these kinds of conversations are going to change the whiskey world, you know, for years to come, long time. So I
decades.
Appreciate it. Yeah, that's how our industry works. That's the time scales in which we think. So I appreciate it. I'm glad to have these shots. Thank you.
Well, let me give you a quick toast here and we'll let you go. Is there anything, where can people find you? What's your social media handles? What do you want to give a good plug for?
On Instagram, I'm Nicole Marie Austin. You're welcome to follow me. You're mostly going to find pictures of my dog and my horse. But every once in a while, I remember that I should also post about my job. And sometimes you learn fun things about new whiskeys that are coming out.
When is this coming out? When can we expect to see it in Texas specifically?
So the bottled and bond or the bourbon? So the bourbon. Edition 3 of the bottled and bond should be out now. The Dickel bourbon is going to start hitting shelves in July.
Sweet. All right. Thanks so much, Nicole Austin. You're amazing. Continue Cheers. Doing what you do. And you. Let me know when you come out with that, 2% chocolate bourbon or Tennessee whiskey. I want push that envelope. I really think you could push that category.
You know, honestly, if I chose to do something like that, I would tell you anyways. I don't need it to. I would say it on the label if I chose to do something like that.
Sure. Sure. All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.